We hear this all the time, don't we? That the United States of America is one of the most religious and observant countries in Western civilization. Now, if you really want to go to religious countries, you go to countries like Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Iran. I mean, if you want to just talk about general religion, then we've got countries that are almost uniformly religious, 100% religious. There's great doubt. In fact, I not only doubt it, I dispute the claim that America is a Christian nation. If it is, it ain't much of one at all, because apparently Americans don't know enough about their so-called religion, Christianity, to pass a basic test. We're going to hear some audio open lines, audio to that effect here at the very beginning of Issues Etc. today. I wonder how Muslims in Iran would fare if asked about the history of their religion. I'm sure they'd get at least a barely passing grade. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Email us here in the studio. We're coming to you live this Wednesday, the 14th of March. Issues ETC at KFUO.org. We start with an NBC News story on what Americans know, or I think it should be say, what they don't know about religion. And along with a little knowledge being a dangerous thing, what they do know, they don't know very well. Then we'll move on to a PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly feature on Senator Barack Obama's pastor, a controversial figure, no doubt about it. There's a church in Washington State that is teaching a junior high class on sex ed. Now, they do teach abstinence, but they also teach contraception, birth control. This might be a church that gets the Sean Hannity seal of approval. And then a CNN update on the fallout of General Peter Pace's comments on homosexuality and adultery being immoral a little bit later in this first hour of Issues Etc. We'll spend the second hour entirely dedicated, or at least second half hour, entirely dedicated to the issue of Islam. That's leading up to a conversation with Robert Spencer, author of the book The Truth About Muhammad, founder of the world's most intolerant religion, and director of Jihad Watch. We're going to be talking with him about the truth regarding the Prophet of Islam. The last half hour of the program, we're going to spend with Duane Gish from the Institute for Creation Research discussing Newsweek's magazine cover story. You saw it? Beyond Bones, Stones and Bones. Apparently, the evolutionary theory is undergoing its own evolution. It's changing to fit the facts or the lack thereof. We'll talk about that with Duane Gish in the last half hour. Again, our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. With all the talk about how religious Americans are, this little piece from NBC News might come as a surprise to some.
The separation of church and state, it's kept religious education out of America's schools, but some say that is dangerous because of the huge role religion is playing in politics, as well as the Iraq war in the Middle East region. And a new survey is showing Americans they get an F when it comes to religion. Philip Goff is the director of the Center of the Study of Religion and American Culture at Indiana University. Good morning once again to you, Philip.
Good morning.
Are we talking here about the beliefs, the values, religious history, its meaning? What is it we're talking about here? What in terms of what needs to be taught to Americans?
Well, it actually cuts across the board. You know, the polls indicated that people who talk about how important religion is to them and their own values, polls show that they can't name but perhaps two or three of the Ten Commandments. So that's history, that's values, that's belief. It cuts across the spectrum.
And do you think religion is truly intertwined with American culture these days? We know it was when our forefathers set out to start this country. They, although, got around to the separation of church and state. But in terms of the culture, is it present day there?
It is, although in subtle ways. Oddly enough, in the days of the founding, only about 10% of the people belonged to a church. Now it's over 50%. So in that sense, people hold religion to be more valuable. But then it shows up in subtle ways through pop music and icons, you know, the various things that people wear, even pop stars like Madonna, for instance.
What about teaching religion in schools? Ought it really to be taught there, or should parents hold the bulk of the responsibility in taking their kids to church and teaching them about religion, the history and the culture?
Well, there's no doubt when you're talking about teaching religion itself as to what they should believe, that should be left to parents and the institution of the church or the temple or the synagogue. When it comes to teaching about religion, that is its role in history and literature, that's where schools are helpful, or they can be helpful. Unfortunately, they've not been for the past 40 years.
All right, though, probably not the case at Indiana University, though, where you are the director of the center there. Thanks, Philip Goff.
Thank you.
So are you surprised by America's religious ignorance? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727 is the answer to teach religion in public schools. Now, the solution being suggested here in this interview is that religion in a general sense, comparative religions is what they used to call it, should be taught in public schools. I don't know that there are many people who, even atheists, who would argue that it wouldn't be a valuable thing for society, for people to understand the plurality of religions that we have here, that a simple course in comparative religion is probably basic to a well-rounded education. Not belief in that religion, but knowledge about what religious beliefs are. Look at what ignorance regarding Islam has bought us in the last 3 years. Look at what the phrase "Islam is peace" has gotten us in the last 3 or 4 years. One might argue, had we known a little bit more, in fact, a little bit later, we'd talk with Robert Spencer, who argues quite forcefully that had our lawmakers known a little bit more about Islam and about Muhammad and what he really taught, things might have gone a little differently. So I remember being asked, probably 10 years ago, to visit a public school south of St. Louis to teach a segment on Christianity in a comparative religions course. I wasn't there to proselytize. I was there to give the basic, straight story on Christianity. So is that the solution? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. Couldn't name more than 4 of the 10 commandments, and those were the people who were surveyed who said they cared most about Christian values in society. Couldn't name more than 4 of the 10 commandments. You know, I've tried this several times when I've been preaching, especially when the text has something to do with the commandments or a commandment. I've tried it several times. You preachers, if you are brave enough, you might want to try it with your congregations. The next time it comes up in a sermon, something regarding the 10 commandments, you can take a few minutes and just ask the congregation to name them. No, do this. First ask them if they think they keep them. And if anyone says yes, then say, name them. You can't obey what you don't know. Even if they say they don't keep them, which, of course, that's the right answer. Even if they say they don't keep them, they should still know them. Because you can't really know what you're keeping or not keeping if you don't know the commandments. This is just part of America's ignorance regarding religion. So what's the solution? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or email us issuesetc@kfuo.org. 50% of Americans say that they hold membership in a church, synagogue, mosque. What do they call them now? Houses of worship? 50% of Americans say that they are members of a religious organization. Church, synagogue, mosque. And yet we get an F on our knowledge of religion. Are you surprised? Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. And our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. So is the solution to teach religion in public schools? Just like you would teach Shakespeare, history, math, science, to teach these are the tenets of the historic tenets of Christianity. These are the historic tenets of Islam. These are the historic tenets of Judaism. These are the historic tenets of Buddhism, Hinduism. Go on down the line until you think you've exhausted the major world religions. Email us here, and we'll get it right in the studio. Issues ETC at KFUO.org. We talked last week, I think it was Hannity and Combs who interviewed Barack Obama's pastor. I didn't know this, but did you know that Barack Obama attends a megachurch? It is a megachurch, 9,000 members. That alone doesn't qualify it as a megachurch, but I think that they probably qualify with 9,000 members for a 2,000 in church every Sunday. It's an interesting church. It's a church that is connected with the United Churches of Christ. And even within that very liberal denomination, it holds some pretty interesting views. We'll be talking about that in just a few minutes. I will say this, the interview between Sean Hannity and Barack Obama's pastor that we played last week was a little more heated than the interview that we'll hear in just a few minutes from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly. First, let's go to the phones to Newark, Ohio, where Matthew is listening on the line. Hi, Matthew.
Hi, Todd. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good. Just kind of responding to your comments there, should we really be surprised that so many people don't know that much about Christianity specifically when really the church nowadays, at least the evangelical church, really doesn't seem to be teaching it much in regards to, you know, like when you had your comments, so it was a week ago or two, about Rick Warren and that kind of whole movement. I mean, they aren't teaching the Ten Commandments, much less the fact that we can't keep them. So really, it should be more a failing of the church than, you know, public schools, obviously.
You know, it makes me wonder, Matthew, whether or not if the survey had asked people to name the five purposes,
yeah.
Could they have named a better percentage of the five purposes than they can of the Ten Commandments? And
right.
That wouldn't be good news, I don't think.
Yeah, and I mean, really, if you were asked the average American Christian, you know, on issues of how a person's saved, chances are you're probably going to get the same answer as you would of an American secular Muslim, really.
Sure, yeah, I think you're right. And that's where the impact is really felt here. If Americans are ignorant about even some of the most basic elements of, say, the Christian faith, just the facts, just the information, if they're ignorant about that, what in the world, or how in the world will their ignorance extend to the real meat of these things, which is the promises attached about salvation? 80% of Americans consider themselves in some sense to be Christian. Just under 50% of Americans are members of Christian churches in some sense. And that percentage continues to rise, by the way. While knowledge of religion falls, what would you say if they did a... What would it say about American religious life if the average American... Let's just talk about evangelicals. If the average American evangelical could name more of Rick Warren's five purposes than they could of God's Ten Commandments. Let's go back to the phones and talk with Claire in High Ridge. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Todd. I grew up back on the East Coast in an urban area, so that when you played with your playmates, you learned about their religions because you talked about various different things of what you did and where you were going and so forth and so on. And you got to be acquainted with all the customs, et cetera, that were acquainted with their particular beliefs. But as time has progressed and people have moved out to suburbia or in the urban areas, they don't have that ability to congregate with these various people and learn these things. And the only way they can learn is through some kind of didactic instruction. We see it in some colleges where teenagers and young adults are learning about religions. And from that point are deciding, oh, well, I like this religion versus this religion, when they're learning it that way, when they're looking for something. But perhaps if it started younger, that people would have an idea that there are differences and then be able to discuss it in their own religious group, that would, I think, perhaps make people more aware of the differences.
All right. Thank you very much, Claire. Sure. I think starting earlier, maybe a good step would be removing religion from those topics that you don't discuss in polite company, along with politics. And what was the other one? Politics and religion. It might have used, in the old days, it might have been sex, but of course, everybody's talking about sex. For some churches, that's pretty much all they're talking about for the next couple weeks until Easter. People who walk out of a church on Sunday morning and are able to talk more about various sexual positions than they can about the Ten Commandments or about the cross. Is it any wonder? Have you seen the program called Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? Have you seen this, Jeff? Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? You haven't seen this? Do you watch American Idol? No. All right. I'll talk to somebody who actually is engaged in society. This program, I don't know when it's on the air now. It might be on tonight for all I know.
Tell our listeners, if we had a webcam, explain to them, describe to them what's happening.
Well, they would be watching you trying to move a mic stand past me every single day. He does this while I'm talking.
You think if I was a good producer, I'd do it before the show
starts? Yeah, you might.
I don't want to talk.
Put that on your job description. Move the mic before the program begins.
Will that result in a pay raise?
No. So, this program, it's hosted by Jeff Foxworthy, who I think is a really funny guy. And here's the scenario if you have not seen it. If you have, you'll know what I'm talking about. They take the average adult and they pit him or her against the average fifth grader. They have a group of fifth graders up on the stage, and it's all laid out like a school, like a classroom. And the average adult come up, and then they get to choose their own fifth grader that they want to work with. And then the fifth grader comes up, and the fifth grader and the adult are asked a series of questions from first grade level to fifth grade level. A series of questions. They get to, it's kind of like Jeopardy. They get to choose their category, but they're questions from the level of first grade to fifth grade. And the goal here is for the adult to actually be able to answer correctly all of these questions. Now, this tells you something. It's kind of like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. The adult can call upon certain helps in the course of answering a series of 8 questions from the level of first to fifth grade. I don't think I've seen anyone win $1 million yet. Their final option, of course, if they don't think they can answer the question and they want to walk away with the money, is to drop out of school. Now, you watch this. I'd love to have a television game show called Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader, where you ask nothing but questions. Are you smarter than a Sunday school fifth grader? And ask nothing but questions from Sunday school lessons from first to fifth grade. I wouldn't give away much money, I'm sure. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Jacob in Ann Arbor, Michigan writes, if world religions is taught in public schools, it would most likely be taught as if they were all equal and play down, if mentioned at all, the exclusive claims of Jesus Christ. That's a good thought there, Jacob. I don't know. I think, to be fair, if I were crafting a world's religion course for a public school curriculum, The exclusive claims of Jesus Christ would have to be central to an explanation, to the chapter on Christianity, just as the exclusive claims of the Islamic religion would have to be central there. It's audio open lines for the whole first hour of Issues, etc. In the next hour, we'll start out talking with you about Islam, and then we'll talk about Muhammad with Robert Spencer, author of the book, The Truth About Muhammad. Here's a story from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly about Barack Obama and his pastor.
Senator Barack Obama says he's been deeply influenced by his church, Trinity United Church of Christ on Chicago's South Side, and its senior pastor, Jeremiah Wright. That connection is now generating political controversy. Wright says he's not surprised.
You think it's ugly now, it's going to get worse. It's going to get much worse.
With 9,000 members, Trinity is the largest and one of the most prominent congregations in the United Church of Christ. In the past few weeks, conservative bloggers and pundits have begun raising concerns about Wright's Afrocentric theology and his liberal, some say radical, politics. Wright has been an outspoken opponent of the war in Iraq and a strong supporter of the Palestinians.
I stand before you today to announce my candidacy for president of the United States of America.
Some campaign advisors are reportedly urging Obama to distance himself from Wright. At the last minute, Obama asked Wright not to offer a public prayer at the rally when he announced his run for the presidency. Wright told us he has long understood that Obama may be forced to distance himself.
He cannot afford the Jewish support to wane or start questioning his allegiance to the state of Israel, because I'm saying I think the position we've taken in terms of the Palestinians is wrong.
Thank you. Thank you.
Obama credits Trinity and Wright with bringing him to a personal faith. He says more than 20 years ago, he walked forward in response to an altar call given by Wright.
Kneeling beneath that cross on the south side, I felt that I heard God's Spirit beckoning me. I submitted myself to his will and dedicated myself to discovering his truth.
He says he was especially attracted by Trinity's work for justice in the community and around the world.
I believed and still believe in the power of the African-American religious tradition to spur social change.
Wright says he warned Obama at the beginning of his career that their relationship could have negative ramifications.
They're going to associate your name with mine. That could be detrimental. I told him back then. It holds just as true, even more so now.
All right, we're hearing a PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly piece on Barack Obama and his pastor. The pastor seems to be pretty realistic about what it means to have a parishioner running for president, especially if that pastor holds views that are controversial. He's not going to be surprised if Barack Obama, in his run for the president, tries to distance himself from his own pastor's views. They seem to have a mutual understanding here. Mutual admiration and mutual understanding. Care to react? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or email us. This break is a good time to do that. issuesetc@kfuo.org. If this were a Roman Catholic candidate and his priest, and the Roman Catholic candidate saying, you know, we have an agreement. I'm going to have to distance myself from my priest and his Roman Catholic views in order to win the presidency, and the priest saying, no, that's all right, I understand that. He might have to do that. Would you have any different reaction? We've had a lot of Baptist presidents. If it were a Baptist candidate distancing himself from his Baptist pastor's views, same reaction? We'll be right back with more Audio Open Lines.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
A UCLA psychiatrist says in a new book that abortion hurts women.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Dr. Miriam Grossman of UCLA has written a new book entitled Unprotected, A Campus Psychiatrist Reveals How Political Correctness in Her Profession Endangers Every Student. Grossman wrote the book in part to highlight the existence of an invisible group, women and men with emotional scars from an abortion. They are out there in numbers, she says, but many must seek support from outside the mental health system. According to Grossman, individual practitioners may be sensitive to the trauma of abortion, but the mental health establishment denies it exists.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List, inviting you to join us in our battle for life. For more, go online to sba-list.org.
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, where values thrive, and online at thrivent.com.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. The office memo, or the office email, as often as not, despised. Sometimes the coward's way out, sometimes self-serving. The memo or email can be an obvious part of office intrigue. In 74 BC, the Roman statesman Cicero came back from a distinguished tour of duty in Sicily, and he assumed that people knew of his service. They should have, but they didn't. Some didn't even know he had been out of Rome. Cicero learned a lesson from that. He wrote, "Once I had realized that the Roman people was rather deaf but sharp-eyed, I stopped worrying about what the world heard about me. From that day on, I took care to be seen in person every day." Years later, St. Paul had a similar experience. He knew that people reacted differently to his letters than to his presence. So he often wrote of his desire to see people in person. And his sincerity is proved by all the traveling he did throughout the Mediterranean world. Sometimes office memos and emails have to be sent. But shouldn't love prompt a more personal conversation in your office and fewer memos? Thank you for thinking about that. I'm Dale Meyer.
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, online at thrivent.com. We do more than work. We work with a purpose.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Barack Obama says that one of the things that attracted him to the church that he attends, and we're hearing an interview from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly with Barack Obama and some audio from his pastor as well. What attracted him to this church was its works for justice in the community. Now, this is usually, for some reason, it's usually the liberal churches that get the credit for doing all the works of justice and mercy out in the community, when nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, LCMS World Relief hasn't compromised its theology, its biblical theology, one bit, and its commitment to the centrality of Christ and his cross for sinners, one bit, in order to do their acts of justice and mercy in the community, not just the local community, but the world community. LCMS World Relief is holding a LCMS conference on mercy right here in St. Louis. We're going to be broadcasting live from this conference. You can find out more at our website. The conference is April the 30th through May the 2nd right here in St. Louis. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org. Scroll down just a little bit. You'll find heart-shaped logo, LCMS Conference on Mercy. Hey, there's a cross in there too. And a link to more information, a way to register, and all the information that you need. As I said, we're going to be broadcasting live during the days of that LCMS conference on mercy. It's audio open lines. Let's go back to PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly. We're hearing from Barack Obama and his pastor on their mutual admiration, but also the mutual agreement that they have that in order for him to run for president, Senator Obama might have to distance himself from his pastor and his pastor's viewpoints.
A campaign spokesman says Obama remains proud of his pastor and of Trinity, and he doesn't want to see the church receive negative attention because of his candidacy.
Hey guys.
Wright has an undeniable spiritual influence on the candidate. The title of Obama's book, The Audacity of Hope, came from one of Wright's sermons. And Obama's sermon last week at Brown Chapel AME in Selma, Alabama, echoed themes from another recent sermon given by Wright. The pastor says Obama is firm in his convictions.
His position across the years has been, I know who I am, I know what I believe, but I don't disrespect you or diminish you because you have a different belief. And we don't have to believe the same thing to get along and to build a better world.
Wright says he doesn't want to do anything to hurt Obama. And he acknowledges it's always been tricky to mix faith and politics. I'm Kim Lawton in Washington.
Well, that horse left the barn a long time ago. The mixture of faith and politics, if you are a member of any kind of church, it's going to be up for scrutiny if you decide to run for president. At least from this point on. Oddly enough, President George W. Bush is officially a member of the United Methodist Church, or a congregation thereof. And while it's not as liberal as the United Churches of Christ or some of its congregations, it certainly is, definitely is, on the liberal end of the religious spectrum. Has President George W. Bush distanced himself from his church? Is this something somebody has to do? Would it be something you'd be willing to do if it meant running for the president? For the White House? You just have to distance yourself from your church, your pastor, and their views in order to make it in politics. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. At a more congregational level, I wonder if, we've had prominent Lutheran senators. I'm thinking about Paul Simon, who's got a highway named for him over on the other side of the river, a bow tie symbol. He spent a lot of time distancing himself from his church body. He's dead now. He spent a lot of time in politics distancing himself from his church body, the church body I'm a member of. He distanced himself from our church body on, the issue of abortion. He was pro-choice. And on any number of issues. He was one of those, I'm sorry I'm Lutheran, but please forgive me, politicians. I don't know if he distanced himself from his own pastor's views. It's hard to tell. So it seems that regardless of whether you're UCC or LCMS Lutheran, sometimes you have to distance yourself from your church to do politics.
God gave me sexuality, healthy, holy sexuality.
Those are some UCC youth, some junior high kids, singing a song in church. It's a song that they're being taught in their sex ed course, being taught at their Washington area congregation. Here's the story from National Public Radio.
When it comes to sex education, the federal government has invested hundreds of millions of dollars in abstinence-only programs in the public schools. Students are taught to refrain from sex until marriage, and discussions about contraceptives center on how they're no guarantee against disease or pregnancy. Some more liberal church groups, though, are offering their own sex education programs, classes they say offer a fuller picture. NPR's Rachel Martin attended one class at a church in Washington State.
The afternoon youth group at the United Church of Christ in Federal Way raises its voice in song, but this isn't really your typical Sunday school class.
Physical, spiritual, sexual bodies, physical, spiritual, sexual me. God gave me sexuality, healthy, holy sexuality.
Eight middle schoolers are sprawled out on worn couches. Multicolored beads hang from the windows, and the room is pulsing with 14-year-old energy. The group gathers here every week for a course on faith and sexuality. Today's lesson, in the form of a Jeopardy quiz game, the nitty-gritty on sexually transmitted diseases.
If a person experiences this sensation while urinating, it can be a symptom of an STD.
Okay, you got 5 seconds to confirm.
Burning. Burning or stinging?
Ding, ding,
ding. Yeah! All right. You didn't say what is.
Oh, yes.
Amy Johnson and her husband Eric are longtime members of the church just south of Seattle, and they started the faith and sexuality classes last year. They teach a curriculum developed by the Unitarian Church and the United Church of Christ about 5 years ago called Our Whole Lives. It emphasizes the value and importance of abstaining from sex until marriage, but at the same time, these 14 and 15-year-olds learn about contraception in a very hands-on way. Eric Johnson leads the exercise.
Okay. Ultra sensitive.
lubricated.
Latex.
Right. What's the expiration date?
I'm looking for 2009.
Okay. Amy Johnson explains that part of the goal is to demystify sex while at the same time revering it as a sacred act.
I think that we've covered it so thoroughly. I would hope that it's not such a forbidden fruit kind of thing. You know, it's like this is a natural part of your life.
These kinds of sex education classes have become increasingly popular in the Unitarian Church and the United Church of Christ, and the program has trained more than 1,000 teachers from other Christian denominations and some Jewish synagogues over the past few years.
We have an obligation to help our young people with this most central and spiritual part of their lives. To do anything less is simply immoral.
Deborah Hafner heads up the Religious Institute on Sexual Morality, Justice, and Healing. She's part of a coalition of religious leaders who sent out thousands of letters to clergy and congressmen earlier this year, urging them to support what they call comprehensive sex education for youth. She says faith-based sex education classes like the one at the church in Federal Way are in part a response to the abstinence-only programs in many public schools.
The good news about some of those programs is they do talk about things like peer pressure. You know, they do talk about things like body image. What they don't do is give young people information about how to protect themselves if they do have sex.
They need to know the whole truth. God's not against sex. He just says, hey, you know, wait until you're married.
Okay, I want your reaction to this. There's more to play, but we'll play it here in a moment. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. If your congregation decided to have a sex ed course for the junior high youth of this nature, where it teaches both abstinence and STD information, birth control information, in all the detail that you're hearing about here, would you approve or disapprove? And why? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's Wednesday, March the 14th. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. It's a lot different from the youth group I had when I was growing up. Of course, that was a long time ago.
Jay Forsythe is the youth minister at the High Point Community Church, a large Southern Baptist congregation just down the road from Federal Way in nearby Puyallup, Washington. His youth and sexuality course is focused almost exclusively on abstinence and religious values. He uses metaphors like cars and sports to illustrate his lessons instead of condom obstacle courses or STD quizzes. Forsythe says he addresses contraception, but when he does, he focuses on failure rates.
I tell him if you make the choice to dive into sexual acts, that you know, you may be protected, but then God knows that you did that act, and that takes away some of the purity in you.
National leaders in the abstinence movement say that for a school or a church to teach contraception and abstinence is contradictory.
First of all, I think that you're sending a mixed message.
Richard Land is the head of the Southern Baptist Convention's Ethics Commission. He says teaching kids about contraception in schools or in church is like saying, listen, we want you to wait till you're married, but we don't expect you to listen to us, so here's how to use a condom.
We wouldn't do it. I can tell you right now, there's not a Southern Baptist church. There might be one somewhere, but there would be, I could probably count them on the fingers of two hands, that would talk about contraception to unmarried children.
15-year-old Kelsey Peterson says that more information has helped her make better decisions. She's a member of the Faith and Sexuality class at the Federal Way United Church of Christ.
Ow. It's important not to rip the condom when you open the package.
Here, she's learned about everything from condoms to chlamydia, but Peterson is the exception here. She's made a personal pledge of abstinence and wears a diamond ring on her slender left hand to symbolize that promise.
Like, even when I take it off before bed and stuff, too, it's just always a reminder to me that, you know, of my faith and my promise to myself and to God and to my parents and everyone that I'm saving myself until I'm married.
And so how does a class like this fit into that decision?
I guess this just made me realize how much it means to me. Because I've been in compromising situations where I could say, do I really want to take off my ring and go through with this, or do I want to keep my promise? And this class has helped me keep that promise.
Kids get messages about sex everywhere. TV, movies, magazines, school, their friends. Religious leaders remain divided about the balance of contraception versus abstinence. But one thing they agree on is that if young people are going to learn about sex one way or another, faith communities have got to join the conversation. Rachel Martin, NPR News.
All right, there's the story. I want to know, if your church were planning on doing this, it's an abstinence plus program. That's the technical term they use. They urge abstinence, but then it's kind of like, okay, don't have sex before you're married, but since you're going to anyway, let us teach you all the methods of birth control and how to prevent sexually transmitted diseases. You know, there are Christians who object to sex ed in the public schools. Does it belong in our churches? There's a church that we talked about a couple weeks ago having its pure sex sermon series all the way through Lent leading up to Easter. I wonder if they'd be doing one of these. Let's go to the phones. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Good idea, bad idea, why? Bob calls from his car. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Bad idea.
Bad idea, and why?
Well, I was reading C.S. Lewis's book, Mere Christianity, and I just finished the chapter not too long ago about virtues. And he feels that society, and this is, you got to realize, this was written in the 1940s, but he feels that society, even back then, has created an unnatural appetite for sex. And I think all this talk and demonstrating and everything else, it aids and abets this unnatural appetite for sex, and it also steals away a kid's innocence. You know, you teach them to drive when they're 16. Why? Because they can be licensed to drive when they're 16, and the expectation is, here you go.
You know, it's true. Why, if by this logic, Bob, thank you. Thank you. Brilliant, brilliant thought. By this logic, why don't we teach our kids to drive when they're 8? Hell, they're going to do it anyway. Or at least they might try. I had an older brother who tried when he was 8. Nearly wrecked the car. Made quite a ruckus in the five and dime parking lot. We were sitting in the back seat. I don't know how old we were, 3 and 4? Loving it. If I would have been able to, I would have climbed over the seat and tried to drive too. They're going to do it anyway. Smartest listeners in radio. Bob, thank you very much. What do you think about this? Stealing their innocence. What did you learn about in youth group today, Sally? I learned how to take a condom out of the package without breaking it. Oh, and what did you learn, Jimmy, in youth group? Well, I learned how properly use a condom. That's interesting conversation on the way home from church. Phil's calling from his car. Hi, Phil.
How you doing?
I'm doing well.
I do think that we should teach them what the Bible says about sex. And the only further information that I would give them would be about, I guess, diseases. And now there's this HPV, which is a virus, and there is no contraceptive that will help. And it's the leading killer of women with cervical cancer. And, you know, it's just any sexual contact at all. And you can add those things because Planned Parenthood will not add that. They said they don't want to scare the kids. I know of just in my family, 3 that already has this, and, you know, just let them know that God knows our bodies. He knows that if you spread these things around, you know, and you have sex outside of marriage, you know, these things can happen. And, you know, just tell them to sustain.
All right, Phil, thank you very much. So that's 2 votes saying this is a bad idea for churches to be doing what's called abstinence plus, urging kids to abstain before marriage, but then teaching them everything about birth control and preventing sexually transmitted diseases right there in the junior high youth group. Let's see. Jeff's calling from St. Louis. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, Todd. Comment on your question earlier about teaching about the religion in schools. I would probably suggest that not be mandatory, but elective. And then who do you get to teach, let's just, because Christianity is what we believe, you know, how do you determine which side of it do you teach, the liberal or the, you know, the other end of the spectrum? You know, it's so much about what our culture is about. If it's not, you know, interesting, then, you know, leave it out.
All right. Thank you very much, Jeff. He's answering the question I had raised before, given the fact we played an NBC piece on the ignorance of Americans regarding religion. They get an F, by the way, when quizzed on the religion they claim to believe. How do you solve this problem? One of the solutions proposed was comparative religions in our public schools so that at least as part of their well-rounded education, the kids know at least something about what Christians, Muslims, Jews, Hindus, Buddhists believe and know the differences between the two. Thank you very much. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org, and our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. I'm Todd Wilkin, and Audio Open Lines Issues, Etc. is coming to you live this Wednesday, the 14th of March. Can you believe this month is already over? Well, halfway over? I can't. Flying by. Jeff, how would you have responded if your church, when you were growing up, had offered the, taught you to sing the songs? The sexuality songs taught, you know, got you together with the teenage girls. I don't know, were you a looker when you were 14 years old? Got you together with the teenage girls, and you talked about abstinence, and then they would have opened a box of condoms and started the instruction on how to properly take them out of the package and all this kind of stuff.
I think I would have...
Would that be the church you'd be going?
It would have certainly broken the Sixth Commandment.
It would have urged you to break the Sixth Commandment?
Yes.
You're talking about the one about committing adultery.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Yeah. Did you notice that the one girl that was wearing the abstinence ring at that church in Washington, who said that she did plan to continue to abstain from sex until she's married, they said she's the exception. She's the exception. We might file this under the category of they're going to do it anyway, so we might as well teach them how. Steve calls from North Dakota. Hi, Steve.
This is a horrible idea.
And why?
I'm calling from the perspective I'm a pastor, and I'm in the ELCA, so I could actually see this. I'm sure this is already being adopted by some ELCA congregations. What has always gotten me about the whole idea of, well, we're going to teach them abstinence, but we're also going to put condoms in schools. The lack of logic behind that argument is it assumes that teenagers are having unprotected sex because they can't get condoms, which is completely ludicrous. I mean, you just go to the local 7-Eleven if you want to get a condom, and that, I mean,
It also assumes, Steve, and hang on the line, it also assumes that... they don't know how to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that. Believe me, some of these 14-year-old boys could be teaching the darn course.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
Steve. Oh, absolutely. And then the one woman who said that it's immoral for us not to be teaching kids about this central issue, which she's absolutely right. But, I mean, how we're supposed to be teaching them about sexuality in a way that is in concordance with God's will, not teaching them how to put condoms on. And it's just the mixed signals is just ultimately what we end up doing is telling them it's okay.
Don't but do. Yeah, thank you very much, Steve. Mixed signals, that's a good way of putting it. Well, let's end this segment of Audio Open Lines with an update from CNN on the ongoing fallout from the Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman General Peter Pace's comments on homosexuality and adultery and their immorality.
It came in an interview with the Chicago Tribune, and the hand grenade thrown by the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Peter Pace, on the sensitive issue of gays in the military was completely unexpected.
I believe that homosexual acts between individuals
are immoral and that we should not condone immoral acts. So the don't ask, don't tell allows an individual to serve the country.
Under the policy known as don't ask, don't tell, gays and lesbians cannot openly serve their country in the military. They must hide their personal lives.
Hands, quarter turn to the right, go!
In fact, since the policy started in 1994, more than 11,000 service members have been thrown out for openly engaging in homosexual conduct or even just saying they are homosexual. General Peter Pace explained that his comments were personal, that they came from his own upbringing. But that led to ferocious criticism, not just of the policy, but the general expressing his personal moral code.
I think it is incredibly disrespectful to the tens of thousands of gay and lesbian Americans who have served their country honorably.
As criticism grew, and after talking to Defense Secretary Robert Gates, General Pace took the unusual step of putting out a statement saying, "I should have focused more on my support of the policy and less on my personal moral views." The general stopped well short of an apology. By some estimates, there are as many as 65,000 gay service members. Eric Alva lost his right leg in Iraq. Now retired, he says he wants to be known as a gay man who served his country.
The irony is that the one organization that is our shield of protection against terrorists and of hatred is the one to discriminate within its ranks.
Finally, today, Secretary Gates weighed in on the issue, saying the current law will stand.
I think personal opinion really doesn't have a place here. What's important is that we have a law, a statute that governs don't ask, don't tell.
But some are having second thoughts. Retired General John Shalikashvili, who was chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff when Don't Ask, Don't Tell began, recently wrote that he now believes gays and lesbians can be accepted by their peers in the military. In fact, a recent poll of soldiers coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan showed that about three-quarters of them were comfortable with gay men and women, but only about 1 in 4 were in favor of gays serving openly. Barbara Starr, CNN, The Pentagon.
Well, we'll continue to follow that. It's interesting to hear that Gates says the policy, or in his words, the law is going to stand. The pressure is definitely on to change don't ask, don't tell, don't pursue. And the pressure is not toward, you know, when it was passed, the pressure was, why don't we keep the policy the way it is, which is a ban on gays in the military. And there were those who warned that if we went to don't ask, don't tell, don't pursue, it would eventually be overturned in favor of gays openly serving in the military without any consequences whatsoever. But I guess if you want to apply the logic being applied so broadly nowadays, they're going to do it anyway. Maybe the military should have part of boot camp, a little training on how to do it, if they're going to do it anyway. Tomorrow on the program, we'll talk about the reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Carol Hansen will be our guest. St. Patrick will be the subject as we talk with Pastor Greg Alms. And then, tomorrow on the program, we're going to begin a three-part series on false attempts at spiritual ascent with Dr. Stephen Hine. Tomorrow we'll begin our discussion with Dr. Hine discussing moralism.
Diane Summers, join Paul.
And will we be playing Soundbite of the Week? Oh, yes, we will. We'll be playing Soundbite of the Week tomorrow on Issues, etc. as well. When we come back, it's audio open lines. We're going to change the subject to Islam. Start out with a Fox News segment on a Muslim teen who is suing a school for holding a graduation ceremony at a Christian church. He doesn't like the Christian symbolism around there. And we'll also, a little later, talk about who Muhammad really was with Robert Spencer. Stay tuned.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues, Etc.